This is episode 438, dated Friday, November 14th, 2025.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everyone. Welcome once again to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. Great to be here with all of you today. This is episode 438, dated Friday, November 14th, 2025. And before we continue, allow me to introduce our good friend, colleague, and co-host, Peter O'Toole. Peter, how are you doing?
I have about a quarter of my voice. I'm sucking on cough drops. I hope I'll get through this without too much damage done to everybody involved. But I'm doing okay otherwise. The weather here is kind of yucky, but not pouring rain, so I'll take it.
We are dry for the moment. Temperatures are below, remain below normal for the duration. And we're hearing a dire snowy report for December. I hope that my information is not true. Anyway, let me thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer and editor. Thank you. Peter from Canada, thank you for posting our podcast on one of your chat boards. We appreciate that. Also, our media outlets, thank you for airing us. And, of course, we cannot forget Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions. She archives our shows on my website. To find them, go to www.coevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts. Click on them, and you will see most of our archive programs from latest to earliest. And as Peter would normally say,
merci, Jackie.
There you go.
Merci, Jackie.
I want to say hi to Penny Fleckenstein. She is a listener to our program. Thank you, Penny, for sending me your kind letters. We appreciate that. I also want to say hi to Steve, who is our facilitator for today's program, along with Brad, who is our streamer. And because we are being streamed, allow me to give out my email address because we want to hear from participants and listeners to our show. We want to know your thoughts on what we talk about because we do this for you. And my email address is bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. One of the most talked about issues that's been on the news in the past few years has been diversity, equity, and inclusion, also known as DEI. And I thought what Peter and I thought we would do is to put together a panel to have a conversation about DEI today, and whether or not it's something that we need in society or something that we don't necessarily need. So let me introduce our three panel members. We start out with Regina Brink. Am I saying this right?
Regina Brink.
Regina Brink is here. Thank you for being with us. Also, we have Reverend Michael Garrett. Welcome, Reverend.
Thank you.
And also we have on the panel Mitch Pomerantz. Mitch, welcome.
Thank you, and good afternoon, good evening to all of our streamers.
All right. So Peter, I'm going to let you start us off, and then we'll see what happens.
Welcome, guests. And before we get into the complexities of this issue, I want to ask each person three questions. We'll go around round robin, and just to get a sense of where each of us are at with regards to this DEI thing. So the first question I want to ask each of our guests is, give us a little background of your life history and how it intersects with DEI. And why don't we start with Michael Garrett?
Somehow I knew you were going to say that. Well, I am a black man, or the way I put it, I'm an American who happens to be black. And my life story in terms of how it relates to this subject is, I come from a background where we integrated schools in 1965. And I learned then that I could compete But the first quarter we were there, I made the honor roll. And I finished valedictorian of my class. And I went to a large university, got through that, got a job, and worked my way through that. And there are a lot of stories in there, but I worked my way through that job. Was there for 27 years. So, and in other aspects, I've advocated. I've gone to congressional offices, advocating on behalf of blind and visually impaired individuals, and in other aspects. And I still do that.
So, Michael, how does that tie into DEI, do you think, your life story? In a few words, how does that tie into the whole issue of DEI?
Even in my career, or even in, and I was, the reason I mentioned school was because people have perceptions, misconceptions, and I had to struggle through all of those years in order to achieve something, in order to get promotions. For instance, I had to ask for my last promotion at my job. I had already performed and done the things that were necessary. So when I ask, what do I need to do to become vice president? And my boss said, you got it. You've already done it. But had I not asked, I wouldn't have gotten there.
Regina.
Yes. Okay. I am a woman, and I am a Hispanic American. I've had a lot of different experiences. I'm totally blind, grew up blind. I did go to college, and I was very involved in the student unions there, including the International Student Union, Black Student Union, something called MECHA, and the Intertribal Council. And that was where I learned about different cultures. So I'm a sociology major, and I went into counseling and social work. But what I did as well is get a degree in ethnic studies to understand.
Hello? We can't hear you.
I can hear her. Regina, you keep going. I can hear you. Can the rest of you hear Regina?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. And so I experienced many cultures, and that helped me. I worked in Head Start as a family service worker, and then I went on to the Women Infant Child Program as a counselor and a parent educator. And I then turned to volunteering at the Society for the Blind and went in and redid their volunteer program as a paid volunteer. That's when I started to work with the California Council of the Blind, coordinating their Mutt-Strut events that were happening at the time. And since then, I have been much more active in the American Council of the Blind on the Multicultural Affairs Committee and in the California Council of the Blind. I currently serve as the first vice president and the director of governmental affairs, where I do quite a bit of advocacy work. And I was part of the group that started Inclusive Diversity of California, one of our affiliates that seeks to increase the outreach to underserved communities like I listed. Just carrying on what I did in college. So this has been a major part of my life, and I do want to remind people that it's actually diversity, inclusion, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. DEIA is how it was referred to for a very long time. And somewhere people have cut off the A lately and not attached it. But that is indeed true. They were DEIA programs.
Mitchell, or Mitch, I should say.
I was going to say only my mother called me Mitchell when she was alive. I went to the last K through 6 elementary school, day school for blind children from the age of five. And from the get-go, I had friends and playmates who were Black, who were Latino. I didn't think anything of it. In fact, I was thinking my first girlfriend in nursery school was Latina. I worked for the city of Los Angeles. I was the first blind person hired in a professional capacity. I worked for the city for 2 months shy of 34 years. The first 20 I worked, we called it then and still call it now personnel. Everybody else calls it HR. Out of those 34 years, for probably 26 or 27, I was a first-line supervisor. So I hired folks of all ethnicities and genders and races. When I worked in HR, when I worked in personnel, I worked for a couple of years in our EEOAA section. I used to investigate allegations of discrimination. Later on in my career in personnel, I worked as a trainer, and I taught our affirmative action for supervisors class. So I think I have a pretty good grounding in what affirmative action, what these issues are all about, and I think I practiced what I preached. I have very close friends who are minorities, and I'm very concerned about these issues, but I believe I have a different perspective than my friend Michael and Regina probably have. And I would also, in brief response to you, Regina, about including accessibility into DEI, my problem with that is that accessibility issues, we were talking about accessibility back in the 70s with the Rehabilitation Act, 1990 with the ADA, and I have real concerns, and we can get into it later. I have real concerns about putting accessibility together with DEI. But
Mitch, I have a question.
We will come back to that, Bob.
Yeah, I have a question, Mitch. It's a brief question.
Sure.
Do you distinguish affirmative action from DEI? Because affirmative action's been around since almost when we were all kids.
Actually, Bob, that's a very good question, and I believe that DEI is another is kind of a different set of clothes for affirmative action, and even though I used to teach it and used to investigate complaints, I do not support affirmative action. I don't think it's ever helped a blind person. And I honestly think that there are more negatives to affirmative action than there are positives. I think affirmative action is kind of morphed into DEI, and I don't think it's to anybody's advantage that it has done so.
So before we go any further, I'd like to ask each of the panelists, imagine that I come from Mars and I'm flying in my spaceship and I hear this term DEI and I have no idea what it means. Give me a brief definition and of what DEI means and how it plays itself out in day-to-day interactions, in school or at work or wherever. And let's start with Regina.
And I think Mitch and I will just disagree on a lot, because I would like to say that I do not believe DEIA and affirmative action are the same thing. They're very different and they came from different places, and we can get into that later.
So yeah, but what's your definition of DEI?
It is the intentional outreach and embrace of people from all backgrounds who are qualified to hold positions or be in organizations or be part of life. It is an intentionality of including everybody, not thinking it will just happen organically.
Mitch.
I think my biggest problem with DEI is the concept of equity, because equity means equal outcomes for everyone. And that, I don't think that's something that we need to be or should be promoting. My problem with equal outcomes, it's not equality, and we are trying as a nation to foster equality, not equal outcomes. We live in a country that promotes opportunity, and I believe personally in equal opportunity, not equal outcomes, and I champion that for anybody and everybody, regardless of their race or gender. I've never had an issue with diversity. I've never had an issue with inclusion, but my biggest issue with DEI is how equity has been cast. And
so, Mitch, before we go any further, to that Martian who landed on Earth and has no idea where you're talking about what DEI is, what is your definition of what DEI is?
I believe that it is an artificial means of getting people to include and kind of govern people's interactions in education in the workplace. I don't, you know, that's obviously a different perspective than Regina's, but I see it as a negative in most ways.
Can you explain briefly what you mean by artificial?
As in most human endeavors, Bob, I'm sure that when it was originally posited, that you know, folks said, yes, we need to intentionally include diverse populations. We need to have equity so that everybody has a fair chance. But what has happened, I think, particularly in the last decade, is that it has been co-opted, and let me insert parenthetically, I have as many issues with the far right as I have with the far left. So I'm not picking on the far left, but I think it has been usurped and turned into something that has fostered not diversity, equity, and inclusion on, for example, college campuses, but it has fostered divisiveness, and I think it has had the exact opposite effect that it was originally intended to address.
Michael, what is your definition of DEI to that poor Martian who's just landed on Earth?
Poor Martian. let me see if I can help you, Martian. My definition is that DEI is an extension of an attempt to extend civil rights so that people of minority views can have a shot at equal opportunity. And I define equity a little bit different than even I believe equity is equal opportunity. You know, outcomes will be what they are, but if you don't have an equal opportunity, you never know what the outcomes are going to be.
Okay, I appreciate it. Now, would we all agree that these definitions, and by three very thoughtful people, are not very close, maybe? They're a little bit different. And I think that's part of the problem that we're dealing with here, that all of us have a different understanding of what DEI in fact is. And I don't know quite how to make those definitions meld perfectly, But I am sort of curious, Mitch. You talked about the word artificial. I know Bob talked about it. And my sort of thought, and I'm interested, but Mitch, I want you to react first, is to some degree, if you're going to include people you're not used to including, you're going to have to do things that are a little different and may feel a bit artificial. Does that make sense to you at all?
Yeah, and look, and Michael and I have had several discussions along these lines. Human beings are basically tribal. We're more comfortable with our own kind. We're more comfortable with our families, with our village, with our whatever. What I believe is that you can be inclusive. You can embrace diverse groups. My issue, and it more centers on how I believe equity is defined, and that what it tends to do, and what I think we've seen on college campuses, and I think we've seen it in workplaces too, is that it has imposed divisions. There are things that people are afraid to say. They're afraid to talk to their coworkers who may be minorities, because they're afraid of hurting feelings or of offending. And unfortunately, you know, my career, at least for 20 of the 34 years I worked in government, was in human resources. And a lot of that division has been fostered by people's fear to speak to others and to try to break down those barriers. So my feeling is DEI has caused more problems and more difference than it has resolved.
Mitch, I'd like to think that when we all talk to one another, we're all ourselves. So I'm wondering where this fear evolved and what somebody is saying to somebody. If I'm speaking to a minority person and we're talking about sports or the weather or food or school, everybody has that same interest, that same thing in common. Where did this fear evolve?
Bob, it is that those are impersonal. They don't touch your heart or your soul. They are, if you start talking about why you feel a certain way about your member of Congress or about your president or about where you work or about your supervisor, that's much more personal. The issues, the topics that you cite are not personal. They're not going to hit to how someone actually feels about their day-to-day distance. At least that's how I see it.
Regina, would you like to react to anything that's been said so far?
Yes. First of all, I love English, like the actual study of English. And I used to require my children to carry a pocket dictionary and a thesaurus everywhere they went, because I felt that was super important to understand words, what they actually mean, not what we think they mean. And if you look up equity in the dictionary, it says the act of being fair and impartial. And that is what I believe equity is. It is not about outcomes. It has never been about outcomes. What I think some of the fear may be is that people have had some okay, so if I have a lot of money, I can donate to a college and get my relatives in, correct? We all know that, right? And so if wealth is concentrated in certain groups, what will happen is those groups can get their people in regardless of their grades, regardless of their ability, because they donated to that college. Well, if I come from my background where mom and dad, you know, when my mom was a nurse's aide, my dad was a mechanic and stuff. So, and they came from longshoremen and field workers. And I was the first to go to college because of the Department of Rehabilitation paying for it. And we couldn't donate to a college to get any of us in. So I had to make good grades. And I made those straight A's all the way through. I graduated with a 3.89 because I felt that I had been given an opportunity that none of my other relatives had. And I need to make it to show everybody that someone that was from a poor Hispanic background could do this. And that's what equity is. And so, yes, I do want to say that if people are afraid, it's because maybe these other pathways, if we really are honest, might be better served by actually giving people equal opportunity. And I don't think it was ever about equal outcomes. I think that is just not true. I can find you people in college that are of all backgrounds that achieve highly, and people of all backgrounds that flunk out.
Peter, Mitch, may I cite something that I came across the other day?
Yeah.
This is from the United Way National Capital Area document that they put out to their people. Equity is meeting communities where they are and allocating resources and opportunities based on individual needs to create equal outcomes for all community members. Now, United Way didn't just, you know, come into this arena. They've been around a long time. They do good work, but a respected organization based in Washington, D.C., in fact, does believe that equity means equal outcomes.
So,
not the only one, but
go ahead, Michael.
But equal outcomes, just like a lot of things in this whole subject here, is unrealistic.
Yes, and it is. Absolutely.
That's why I say it's about equal opportunity.
Yes.
All men are created equal, but all men don't have equal opportunity.
Yes, all people are created equal, and all people don't have equal opportunity. And that statement, just the way we say that, because women were left out of most of the Constitution and everything else. I won't cite the 3/5 thing. Well, we all know that's it. But women were totally left out. And Abigail Adams famously told her husband that she guess nothing applied to her. She didn't have to follow the law since the Constitution didn't even include her.
Well, I say that, Regina, I say that inclusively. I know when I say men, I'm saying mankind.
Okay.
So I know that part of it, but I say man, all people are created equal, but all opportunity is not equal. So right. Even though that's a documented statement you have there, Mitch, I disagree with it.
Well, and
no, I disagree with their how they've gotten there. But let me say, by the way, Michael, you could get into trouble in a lot of circles by saying mankind. There are a lot of people who say humankind, so well, you better be careful there.
Well, it's not about being careful, but just understanding that we're all included. And I don't think language is so much as important as the understanding that we're all included, and that when you go to talk about math and engineering, that you equally present those opportunities to girls as to boys. There's tangible evidence that girls are encouraged not to go into those fields still, and boys are encouraged to go into them. I'm talking kids. And I did a lot of work in this area. Girls and boys are pretty evenly interested in those up until the certain grades. And there are things that are happening that discourage the girls and encourage the boys. And we don't need to do that. Again, that fair and impartial thing. That's at the root of it. And Mitch, the way you write a grant for United Way is way different than what we're talking about with DEIA, because
the fact that they felt obligated to write what they wrote, right? It's confusing. We're having a conversation about what they actually meant.
What
they could have easily said was, we support communities can equal opportunities to succeed. You know,
but, I think equal outcomes
are measurable, and equal opportunity is not measurable. And when you're doing a grant, you need outcomes. In other words, how many people, when you put this grant forward, how many people moved on into a job, or how many people moved on to go to college, or how many people actually moved into a different space than say their body or wherever where I grew up. And so it is about equal opportunity, equal resources, but the outcomes don't mean the same thing. So if I go to college or I get a job, those are outcomes that are measurable. Okay, that doesn't mean that I succeeded in college. That would take further stuff. But it depends on what the United Way is speaking about. And so you can't just take a statement like that out of context.
Oh, there's more, which I'm not citing, but I'm telling you, I would feel much better about this whole concept if the term equality was used rather than equity, because I think that's really what we all should be about. Equal opportunity, equality for everyone, regardless of whatever group you happen to belong to. And that's what I believe in.
I have a general question to ask all three of you, and it is a rather powerful one. It kind of sums up the whole picture here. Without DEI, do you think there would be more discrimination?
Can I jump in on that one?
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
Go ahead, Michael. Good question, Bob. Because I redefined DEI because of the current state of affairs in our country. And what I believe it means is discrimination, exclusion, and inequity. Because contrary to the executive order that went out that called DEI discriminatory, I believe it has opened up the more discrimination, because look at the people who got fired, or look at the people in schools where they shut down departments. The two largest state universities here, they shut down those departments. Some people were let go, others were shuffled over to other areas. Thank God they had jobs to go back to, but in a lot of companies, and even the federal government, look at the people who were fired, who were let go, just in the blink of an eye. So it has opened up to more discrimination. It has opened up to more exclusion and inequity, because a lot of the people who were let go were already in the economic gap. So when you start talking about economics, education, healthcare, the people who are most impacted by that executive order and which led to all the companies and universities following suit with a little money dangled out there for the universities. If you support this EO, you know, you'll get $2 million or something along those lines. So yeah, I believe it has opened up to more discrimination in our country.
And Michael, you and I agree, but I'd take it one step further, and I don't want us to get into the weeds, but I would say that one of the not so secret reasons for that executive order and for riffing reduction in force that occurred during the shutdown is it's a way of reducing the government workforce and being able to get away with it. Now, thankfully, they're not getting away with it, but it goes to the point of, well, we've got a way of reducing the numbers in government because we all know there are too many bureaucrats. And I use the word bureaucrat. For me, I used to call myself a bureaucrat, and I was bloody proud of being a bureaucrat. But I think that's one step beyond your point, but you and I definitely agree on that.
And I want to be really clear about this, and I want to make sure that we're on the same page. When President Trump came to office, a lot of folks were let go, and a large percentage, much more than were African-American, African-American women, minority women. It was not an equal opportunity firing, as it were. As it turned out, a lot of the folks who left were folks who came from, who weren't white male, let's put it that way. Is that what you're saying, Michael? I just want to make sure that I'm not reading you wrong.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Because go ahead.
So DEI has become to be synonymous with being a minority person or whatever, but that's not its actual meaning. It's almost like that other CRT, right? It's being used as a coded word. So when the DEI order came down, it did what it was meant to do. I don't think that was an accident. It was targeted at certain communities. And the reality is, in a lot of situations, African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans are still underrepresented if you look at the population. And then you look at them. Or in the area of American Council of the Blind, if you look at the people that are losing their vision at the highest rates, they are not joining our organization. And we could say, well, maybe they don't want to. I think they don't know about us, and they don't know what we can do, what an organization like ours can do to help their lives. And so I think it behooves us to try to think of ways to reach out that are culturally sensitive. That doesn't mean that anybody has to suffer for that. That doesn't take away from the current members of the American Council of the Blind. And that's what I think is being missed, that giving opportunities.
Regina, I think with regard to the government, minorities were heavily impacted. I haven't seen the statistics for some time. Thankfully, I've been retired from government for 17 years, but I think that the federal government, you looked at their statistics and the number of minorities employed, whether they were African American, Hispanic, Asian American, even disabled people with disabilities, I think the numbers would be pretty close to our representation in the population. So I think that, and I still believe that the primary reason for all those layoffs just was a good way to reduce the numbers of government, but it did impact minorities, be they ethnic minorities or people with disabilities.
I agree.
I don't know how many of our members got laid off.
Before we go any further, I just want to say that this show goes out well beyond the ACB boundaries. And so yep. Regina's comment, we're dead on, but that doesn't just apply to the American Council of the Blind. It applies to every organization who's trying to recruit people, you know, of different backgrounds, that there are things that we all should be doing, to make it more likely that we'll get more folks of diverse backgrounds in our organizations. And that's what I think DEI is partly about. Bob, should we open up for questions?
Yes, I think we should. We have about 20 minutes to allow participants to come in and join us on our very informative conversation about DEI. So let me just reiterate, this is Bob Branco, and my co-host is Peter Alcho. Our guests are Regina Brink, Reverend Michael Garrett, and Mitch Pomerantz. We're talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Steve, do we have anybody with their hands raised that would like to join in on the discussion?
We have four so far, and the first up is Donna.
All right, Donna, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for holding this discussion. I guess I'd like to, Bob, you asked a question early on that really resonated with me. Where do you believe the fear comes from? The fear, in my belief, comes from being corrected if I say the wrong thing, use the wrong language, maybe do the wrong thing. That's where part of the fear comes from.
And you know, Donna, not to interrupt you, but that's being magnified today by cancel culture.
Correct. Correct. You and I are exactly on the same page. And so I think that, and I too am extremely unhappy with the left and the right. I think that we all need to try and do what we can do to find the middle ground, because both sides are reacting to what they feel they have experienced, et cetera, which has caused the divisiveness.
So let me go back. Let me go back, Bob, because I want to make sure I'm clear on what you meant by fear, Bob. Who's afraid? Are you saying everybody has the fear factor?
I don't think everybody does. No, I mean, as I pointed out earlier, we all try to be ourselves. But yeah, for some reason, and as I just told Donna, cancel culture does not help the matter.
Correct.
You know, we have to be careful what we say nowadays. We can't say this anymore. We can't say that anymore. I was brought up on those terms, and I had no problem with them. But today we can't say them.
Which terms?
I believe that the fear comes. It comes in different ways because of perception. You know, as a black man in America, you know, I told you when I got hired in my job, I was under the tutelage of Jerry Valentine, a very important economist, very well known around the country, and he gave me an assignment, and he said to me, "Oh, I didn't think you could do that."
Go ahead, Mike. Then I got something to say to Donna. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, and then I'll get to my point. I apologize.
If it had been me, I wouldn't have hired you. You know, and I don't know if that was because of my blindness or because of my race. But
Donna, you were talking about terms, and what I was referring to specifically.
Bob. Yeah? Let Michael finish, please.
Okay, because Donna was asking me something. Go ahead.
No, the reason because I wanted to be clear on where the fear fear comes from, because I think that people come from with perceptions that they grew up with, that they learned, and they don't want to reach out. You know,
yeah.
Mitch talks about, you know, tribalism and that sort of thing. You feel comfortable with yourself. You know, people like mind and like race and those kinds of things, but sometimes people just don't want to get out there and find out about somebody else because they don't know what to expect.
Apologies, Bob.
Donna, may I respond to your question?
Yes, and then I'll get to my question.
Okay, the terms that I was referring to specifically, the ones I were referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've heard recently that they took the term Providence Plantations out of the state of Rhode Island because you're not supposed to say plantation anymore because it implies slavery. Nobody says that it always implies slavery. What's wrong with plantation? Same thing for master bedroom. You can't say master anymore because it refers to a slave master. It doesn't. But this is what cancel culture does.
Donnie, would you like to ask your question, please?
Yes. Yeah. Well, and what I'll say is the example was, it was done in this call. When Michael said mankind, he was corrected. When you talked about this call saying DEI, you guys were corrected. That is part of, you know, and I won't, you know, get into motive or anything because each and every one of us individually know our heart. So I won't get into that, but my question is, because having been a supervisor, we had people that were hired on merit, and we had people who were hired because of the box that needed to be checked. And I am Latina, and I'm a very proud Latina and have experienced discrimination and all that as well. What does one do for the morale of, because we had people who were African American, who were Latino, Latina, who were hired on merit, and some who were hired, and there was fighting amongst the equal races because folks who were hired to check a box and not necessarily on merit, nothing could be done to them because it would be stated, you know, oh, if anything's done, they're going to cry racist and the union is going to stick up for them. So we just might as well leave it. What do we do to bring back the morale to try to get us all back to center? That's my question. Thank you.
And I want to be clear. I wasn't trying to correct Michael. I would never try to do that. I was just stating it from my perspective, and that's fine. We can both have different ways of saying things. And I think that's way different than cancel culture, because when people come together, we're going to have different ways of expressing ourselves. And that should be fine either way.
I think Bob's point is a good one about cancel culture. And I'm sorry to say this, but too many proponents of DEI, and again, I'm saying it's been co-opted perhaps, but too many proponents of DEI are proponents of cancel culture. They want to make sure that you say whatever you're going to say in exactly the right way. And when I made my comment, Michael, about humankind instead of mankind, that was just, I wasn't saying it that that's what I believe, but it's what an awful lot of people would say to you about using that term, because you by saying man you are perforce excluding women.
Max, could you talk for 30 seconds about Donna's question, which I think is a really good one? I have all kinds of reactions, but I'm curious to know what yours is about folks who are hired because they're qualified and those who are hired to check a box. How do you respond to something like that?
I was fortunate. When the city had an affirmative action program, but because everybody had to take a test and was graded, our affirmative action policy said if you have two or more candidates with the same score, then you can use your department's affirmative action goals to make a decision, but they had to be equally qualified in order to do that. I think that so many employers who are not as well versed in HR, I think that they are so fearful, to use that term again, of getting having some organization or entity come down on them with both feet, that they do check boxes. They don't necessarily hire the most qualified. And I'm here to tell you, because I supervised minorities for most of the time I was a supervisor, you are disrespecting minorities when you say that you can't hire a minority or anyone for that matter who doesn't meet your standards, your requirements. I've supervised too many minorities in my years as a supervisor to believe that you have to lower standards or you have to use affirmative action in the wrong way to equalize the playing field.
I agree with that.
Go to the next question, please, because we're running out of time. Who's the next person, Steve?
Next up, we have Deanna.
Deanna?
Hi, Deanna.
There. Okay.
There you are.
Hi.
There we are.
Well, I would never have gone to college had it not been for affirmative action, because as a Native child, we are not naturally competitive. I was in the top 10% of my high school, but I came from strictly blue-collar people. My mother didn't get her GED till I was in high school. She quit school at 14 to take care of younger brothers and sisters, but she decided when I came off the operating table totally blind at 8 and a half that her child was going to make it in this world because she was still who she was born to be. As my great-grandmother said, I was the quiet water child. The quiet water child is stubborn and hard-headed, but doesn't make waves. It flows around things. It flows through them. It piles up behind them until it can flow over the top. It doesn't necessarily make waves, but it gets where it wants to go because it needs to seek the place it should be. And so with that armor of knowing that I was firstborn daughter, Shawnee Gamakwe, my mother's second pair of hands, I never felt like that poor little blind girl that everybody saw when I wasn't among my people and was out there in the world. And I was petite in stature, soft-spoken, shy. I had to force myself to speak up. I had to and I did it because I could see other blind kids struggling, because they sat quietly in corners and didn't speak up. And I thought, I do that anyway because that's my culture, but I have been forced to speak up and I can be the voice. I can be the one that says it in a sweet, quiet way and gets people to listen instead of being confrontational, which isn't my style. So
any reaction to that, from what Tika, I think she makes a really good point. You do, Deanna, about the whole concept of, you know, not all of us are going to have, folks, Regina may have said the same thing. Not all of us are going to have, donate money to a college and get in. We're going to have the same opportunities. And so I worry that when we say affirmative action is bad, that we throw the whole thing out. And I don't think that's what any of us are saying, but that is what I think some people on the right are saying.
And people that are...
Go ahead, Mitch.
Yeah, go ahead.
I only say, Deanna, you may have been... you may have gone on to college because of an affirmative action program, but you had the intelligence and you had the for lack of a better term, stick-to-itiveness, and you were motivated, and that plays a huge role as a blind Native American lady. When I was growing up, I was always told as a blind man, I had to be better than my classmates. And for the most part, I was.
It was true that if you didn't outperform coworkers, you didn't stand a chance of rising in any organization or doing anything because, and that's what I figured that employers never understood when I applied for jobs because I was petite in stature. I grew up in a culture where long hair was part of who I was. So going off to college, it reached my knees. I often wore it in braids. I often wore long skirts and moccasins. So I was mistaken for being a flower child. And that was the furthest thing from what I was because I knew that I was a scholarship kid and I had to keep my grades up. And I was a master sergeant's daughter and a powwow princess. So I owed it to my people to be of good character and represent my people wherever I went because they automatically either thought I was an army brat or they thought in that circle and they thought I was that poor little blind girl or they thought I was just one of those res girls. And everybody knew all you had to do was get them drunk and you could do anything you wanted, you know, and my father probably beat my mother. And the reason I was being raised by a single mom was because my father was a drunk. All of these things that were stamped on me by the color of my skin and how I appeared on the outside, but I knew I was strong, stubborn, and came from a long line of survival women who fought hard for their children and did their best.
Sorry to interrupt you, but we have two other people, and I'm not sure to get to you.
We have about 3 or 4 minutes to go. Thank you very much.
You said powerful things. I'm sorry to have to, you know.
Sure. Intervene. No, that's just what I had to say.
Well, you said a lot.
Thank you. Steve, we got time for one more.
Okay. Next up is Stacy.
Stacy.
Hello, Stacy. Welcome.
Hello. Yeah, I've thought a lot about this over the years, especially after I quit my job, my last job about 40 years ago. Well, no, it was, something like in 1998, they either like you or they don't like you. And that's a problem. And the whole thing is, I was on a production thing job, and I don't care what anybody says. I had tried with a screen reader to keep up, you know, and lots of times, you know, you just can't do it. And I couldn't. I don't know. So some people say they can, and more power to them, but I couldn't. And so I finally,
So what I've learned, Bob, from this conversation is that we need to repeat it. There's a lot more to be said. And if the panelists are willing to come back in 3 months or sometime, I would welcome all of you back. Thank you.
I echo Peter's sentiments. This is a great conversation, and we can go in a lot of different directions. Of course, we're limited in the amount of time that we have on In Perspective every time we do it. So yes, I totally agree. We should welcome all of you back to the show.
Be happy to do that.
And I want to thank all of you very much for your opinions and your input. I think we've learned a lot today, and thanks again. We appreciate it.
Thank you all.
But if you've got a couple of seconds, I would recommend you find Paolo Galliano. He's in a book. You're familiar with it, Peter?
I am. What's the title?
I think it's Measuring DEI or something like that.
It's something like that. But Galliano is a really good writer. So
can you send us that information, Michael?
I got it in the podcast. I'll see what I can.
Send me an email with that title and author, Michael.
He's one of the better diversity people I read.
So. And then hopefully, Mitch, you heard that I did agree with you on your last point.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's celebrate those agreements because they're not always.
I'm not totally a caveman.
No, you're not, Mitch. And
you're not that old, Mitch.
Total radical either. So,
no.
You know, yeah.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you all. We really appreciate you, and we'll do this again sometime.
All right.
Go safe with God's abundant blessings, everybody, and have yourself a great week. Take care.
You too.
Peter, I hope you feel much better.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. I'll get bored.